You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Howdy, partner. Hints on how to be a more competent training partner in the martial arts. Training in martial sports, and for that matter, combat arts, is usually a team effort. Despite the fact that martial arts skills are usually expressed, whether in self-defense or in competition, by individuals in single combat, the majority of martial artists train as part of a group. Your fellow students are, or at least should be, in a very real sense, your teammates. They are potentially valuable assets for you, for each other, and for the instructor. At many modern academies, a large fraction of training is done with the students paired off as partners. At some of these academies, however, partner training is little more than all-out sparring. These gyms are quite simply jungles, red in tooth and claw, and only the gifted survive without physical or psychological injury. Such establishments often claim that they are tough gyms that train with high intensity. What's tough, at gyms like this, is for the students of average or lower talent to receive much of an education in anything besides learning to take a beating. In such an environment, you have little incentive to help your fellow students improve. And they have little incentive to do the same for you. After all, it's your fellow students who are administering the beatings to you. Why would you want them to get better? I hope that you don't currently train at such a gym. But even if yours is a high-quality academy, it's still possible for you to become an even better training partner. Your own training is held back if the quality of your training partners is poor. Your training is pushed forward faster if the quality of your training partners is good. As a result, you as a student have a direct personal interest in helping the students around you improve their skills as quickly as possible. The better each one of them becomes, the better your training becomes. One way to hurry this process along is to sharpen your own skills as a training partner. Remember those gyms I described earlier, where partner training consisted mostly of all-out sparring? While training in such an environment, you would think like an opponent, not like a teammate or a coach. So in a decent gym, the first thing to do is to learn to think like a coach, not like an opponent. Imagine if you were a little league coach, hitting balls to your players so that they could practice their fielding skills. Would you use all the power of your adult physique and make each hit a home run swing? Well, maybe with that one really annoying kid. But no, you would give the kids only as much as they could handle, at an optimum level of intensity for learning. In many martial arts training drills, despite the fact that you are both students, one of you plays the role of the feeder, or assistant coach, and the other the role of the receiver, or student. The feeder may be feeding targets, as with focus mitts, tie pads, or a kicking shield, or may be feeding attacks for the receiver to defend, or even a mixture of both. In a perfect world, the feeder would be the instructor, but that is often not practical in a group setting. In such a setting, the students train in pairs as the instructor observes. If you are playing the role of the feeder, feed the way you would like to be fed. In many partner drills, you will be asked as the feeder to randomize your flow of attacks, or the pattern of targets. This brings me to yet another quirky aspect of the human brain. We suck at randomization. If you ask most people to write a random number series of, say, 5 digits, they will nearly always write a series that is indeed not in numerical order, but they will almost never repeat digits. So most people would write, say, 4, 7, 5, 9, 2, but would never write 4, 7, 5, 5, 5, even though each series of numbers is equally random. Even 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 would be. If you ask most people to put 50 dots with a pen or pencil in a random pattern on a piece of paper, nearly all of them would space the dots well apart from one another like the spots on a leopard, with variations in the spaces in between. Almost no one will have made a clump of, say, 5 dots all touching each other in a large super dot, but that pattern would be just as random. So if you are asked as the feeder to randomize your pattern of attacks, you should be sure to throw 3 or 4 repetitions in a row of the same attack from time to time. As a quick word nerd aside, many people, especially young people, use the word random nowadays when they really mean some other word. Random means without pattern or order. Random doesn't mean something that is unexpected, unrecognized, unknown, out of place, weird, or not connected. It also can't meaningfully apply to a single data point. Saying some random guy has no meaning at all. To respond to an event or statement by saying how random is to use the word incorrectly. This is why we can't have nice words, people. If you start changing the usage and meaning of very cool words that have an elegantly precise definition, you are left with a gaping hole in the English language that must now be filled with an awkward, clunky phrase. Whew, okay, I'm done now. Anyway, as the feeder in a martial arts drill, you might notice that the receiver seems to have a blind spot in his defense. Let's say he or she has difficulty seeing your left round kick coming. If you were thinking like an opponent, you might tuck that choice tidbit of information away in a mental back pocket in order to produce it just when the poor sucker or receiver least expects it, using the element of surprise to land your kick successfully yet again. But if you are thinking like a coach, as soon as you perceive your partner's blind spot, you will immediately shift from a randomized, correct use of the word, randomized series of attacks to a series of only left round kicks, or whatever technique your partner is weak at defending. And you will slow the initiation and delivery speed of the attacks as well. You should, in my opinion, continue this altered feed for at least 5 or more repetitions. More repetitions would be even better. Such a shift in feeding pattern will be more boring for you, the feeder. But keep in mind that you are not there to be entertained. Another consideration is when the instructor is directly observing the two of you as training partners. As the instructor moves through the room, correcting technique and offering advice, he or she should offer as much correction to the feeder as to the receiver. That's the cool part. Under a good instructor, you learn and grow as much from feeding as from receiving. If you are the feeder, keep your ears tuned to the corrections the teacher gives your partner. When the instructor finishes explaining the correction, you, as the feeder, should immediately give the receiver a chance to practice the correction by again ceasing a randomized feeding pattern in order to feed the specific target or attack to which the instructor referred. Again, repeatedly, until the instructor is satisfied. It should not be necessary for the teacher to tell you to do this. Sometimes an instructor will ask the feeder to play a role that might be different from his own way of doing things. In such a case, the instructor will give guidance on how to alter and vary the feed for the benefit of the receiver. Sometimes it's as simple as slowing down the feed so as not to overwhelm the less experienced receivers. Or it could be the opposite, increasing the speed of the feed for the receiver who isn't being sufficiently challenged. The instructor might, for various reasons, tell you to feed targets at unusual distances, either a bit farther or closer than would be perfect for the technique the receiver is practicing at the moment. This might be done to add footwork to the drill, or to challenge the receiver's skill at technique selection. You may also be asked to vary the distance of your attacks, sometimes purposely falling a bit short, or sometimes trying to penetrate too deeply, in order to develop the student's ability to judge distance. This can help the student learn to select more appropriate defenses. For example, if the feeder is feeding an attack that is going to penetrate too deeply, the student will see, sooner or later, that taking a retreating step to defend this particular attack is not a good idea. Such a step would back the student right through the sweet spot of the otherwise badly thrown attack. In a similar vein, the teacher may ask the feeder to feed attacks that are slightly off target. This means that a jab you ordinarily might aim at the center line of the receiver, say at his chin or nose, might now be aimed a bit off-center, at his cheek or ear, perhaps. Just as before, this is to develop the proper defensive movement and technique. For example, the instructor may notice that the receiver always slips his upper body and head to his right versus punches aimed at his head. A smart teacher might then instruct the feeder to aim jabs at the student's right ear. Once the feeder makes this adjustment, the student, if he continues his pattern, would shove his face directly into the punch. The coach may ask the feeder to alter his style, perhaps to one that is more or less aggressive, more kicking-oriented, with more or less footwork, or maybe even mimicking an altered state like drunkenness or rage. The possibilities are numerous, far more than I have outlined here. Now, on occasion, I will run into a student who balks at being told to alter his or her feed. The student might say something like, "But I'm not that slow," or, "I would never punch like that." "Well, no shit, Chuck Norris. That's why I call it role-playing. If your precious ego can't tolerate being asked to feed anything but your usual deadly speed, power, and accuracy, maybe you should remove yourself from this academy and rent your own commercial space with mirrors on the walls so you can train alone without your eyes being polluted by the sight of any martial arts technique that falls short of perfection." The preceding rant was brought to you by the voices in my head that I never let speak out loud at my academy. At my academy, I might simply say, "Well, that's the way you'll feed the attacks now." Producing a podcast means I sometimes let the voices in my head out where you can hear them. You're welcome. So there you have it. Any investment of time and effort you put into learning to enhance your skills as a feeder in partner drills will yield huge profits in the future in the form of a group of better training partners for you. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain and the Voices in My Head. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.